Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake, joined by Matt. How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
Perfect. We're also hanging out with senior writer Jacob Caldwell.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
What's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just ready for the second half of baseball to start, hoping that my Yankees go after a pitcher here and stop losing to the Red Sox because it breaks my heart.
Red Sox are killing it. We're going to talk a lot of baseball. We're going to talk some Kawhi trade. This is the first recording since the Kawhi Leonard DeMar DeRozan trade. Might talk a little golf, some soccer. Trying to figure out what to do until football season starts. So we're going to start with baseball. I'm pretty tired. I helped Jacob move into his new digs yesterday. It took about 11 hours.
But it was a long day. Very hot.
So Jacob's got a nice new place if anybody's in Phoenix wants to check that out. Let's talk baseball. Where do we want to start? A lot to cover. Here's where I want to start. All-Star game just happened. Buster Posey was not a starter, and I'm just furious. I just wanted to say that. One of the nice things about having your own show is you get a bench.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's start with the American League. One thing that just happened during the All-Star break is Manny Machado got traded from the Orioles to the Dodgers. So the Orioles are really bad. That's not news breaking. But who else do we think the Orioles are going to keep selling? They got Zach Britton, who's one of the best closers in the league. Also, I'm a big fan of Adam Jones, their center fielder. Do we think they're going to keep selling players? And do you know where they might go?
Yeah, so it sounds like the Orioles are very interested in selling off a lot of their veteran players who are getting close to free agency. At this point, it seems almost certain that Zach Britton is going to be one of those. I've read as much as six teams interested in him. The one that seems to be the most likely is the Cubs. The Cubs just lost their closer to the DL. And so the Cubs really are trying to make a push here because they, as you know, are very tight with the Brewers trying to make a postseason run here. The one worry, though, is that the Cubs don't quite have a strong enough farm system to go for a closer with Zach Britton's caliber. So that'll be interesting to see if they can pull that off. The Adam Jones thing, it's kind of back and forth. The one thing to really pay attention to, though, is that Adam Jones does have his 10-5 rights, which gives him the ability to veto any trade really presented to him. So it's kind of up to him at this point whether he wants to stay or not. But the Orioles are definitely trying to sell off a lot of veteran guys.
So what are because the Yankees want a closer, so Zach Britton, or do they want a closer or a starting pitcher? Like, are the Yankees in the mix for Britton?
The Yankees are not. They, with Aroldis Chapman and Dellin Betances, are 7 through 9 inning guys are really solid. So there's not really a need for a closer right now. The starting pitching is really abysmal aside from Cy Young candidate Luis Severino and then 38-year-old TC Sabathia. And when you have a 38-year-old being one of the best pitchers on your team, that is enough reason for a cause of concern, I think.
Yeah, so looking at going back to Britton, because I heard the Red Sox, the Cubs, obviously. The Red Sox right now are atop the entire league in terms of wins. So do they need a closer? Like, would Zach Britton just be, like, adding to that? Or is their closer depth kind of in jeopardy? Because looking at the Cubs, like you said, their closer just got hurt. So just, I don't know, I'm just kind of looking at, you know, from your perspective, a Yankees fan, the Red Sox are so close, but they are a little bit ahead. So are they going to try to make a move to pull away?
That's interesting. They are talking about Britton, which kind of surprises me because their current closer, Craig Kimbrell is really solid. He's one of the best in the league. So it is interesting to me that they would be going for another closer right now. I have heard a lot about the Red Sox going for pitching as well, which, they already have an insane staff led by Chris Sale, who's had a phenomenal year, also a Cy Young candidate. So a lot of the talk is that they're going for starting pitching as well. So I don't know. See, from what I read, it was mostly Yankees, Red Sox, and Mariners that were pushing for pitchers pretty hard.
Yeah, see, we can hop over to the AL West. So the Astros are killing it in first place in that division. But the Mariners and Athletics are both extremely close. I think the Mariners right now are in that second wild card spot, and the A's are a few games behind them. Let's look. So one of those teams, it looks like standing-wise, are going to get that second wild card spot. The Yankees are probably going to get the first one. So
wait. The Red Sox are going to get the first one. The Yankees are going to win the division.
Okay, one of the Yankees or Red Sox are going to run away with that first wild card. So the second wild card, it looks like it's going to be the Mariners or the Athletics. Either one of those haven't made the playoffs in forever, it seems like. So out of those two teams, Mariners, Athletics, who do you think could get that second spot?
So it's definitely going to be close. If you look at the standings in the American League, it's really between New York / Boston and then Seattle or Oakland. I mean, Tampa Bay is in third place, or I guess the next one out behind Oakland for the wild card spot. They're 9.5 games back from that. So it seems like it's really just Seattle and Oakland battling for that second spot. Like I said, Seattle's really trying to push for another pitcher. There are some starting pitchers out on the market. The Blue Jays are offering a couple of guys, it seems like, between J.A. Happ and Marco Estrada. And then you've got guys like Nathan Eovaldi, Jake Odorizzi, Chris Archer, Ivan Nova, just to name a few guys that are going to be on the market, the trade block here soon. So that's what the Mariners are really going for right now. The A's made a deal with the Mets, finally getting Jerry Familia. So that was pretty big. It seems like the Mets are kind of giving up on their current team and going to be a seller at this point in time and kind of rebuilding from the ground up. But the A's have won 22 of their last 29 games, and they're just three games out of wild card as of this morning. So they can really make a push. The Mariners can make a push. It really depends. It's going to be an interesting trade deadline. Whoever makes the biggest move really could make that push to get that last spot.
Yeah, the Mets. I want to talk about the A's still, but I was reading an article. It said Jacob DeGrom, the Mets starting pitcher, he in his last 10 starts, he'd given up 7 runs and didn't have a win.
Yeah, and that's definitely a cause for concern, as well as, J.A. Happ, he was at the top of that trading block as well, and then his last 3 starts had a 9.75 ERA. So he's both of those guys are very hot topics. Personally, I have continued to hope that the Yankees go for DeGrom. He's really the only big name left on the market. He faces off against the Yankees tonight, actually. So hopefully he has a solid second half start, and that may convince Aaron Boone to make a move there. But yeah, definitely another guy that's on the block right now is DeGrom.
So yeah, that'd be crazy if the Mets traded DeGrom, and even crazier if they traded Syndergaard. I don't know if that'll happen. Let's hop over to the Dodgers. So they traded what we started talking about. They got Manny Machado from the Orioles because their shortstop went down first month or so of the season. They're right now atop the NL West, but Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Rockies, and Giants all are extremely close to each other. So any of those teams could win the division. They'll probably have to make the playoffs as well in that division. So do you see with Manny Machado going to LA them running away with it, or do you still think Arizona and San Francisco can keep touch?
You know, it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, when you see a huge name like Machado go to a team, it's very similar to Stanton going to the Yankees. You expect the team to have a really big boost. A lot of pressure gets put on the all-star in that situation to perform. And I'm sure everybody in LA, at least on the Dodger side, is hoping that, I mean, this is the move that's going to push them beyond the rest, because that division, like you said, is really tight right now with all but the Padres being within 5 games of first place. So it's really wide open right now. I definitely still think that, you know, the Diamondbacks, Rockies, and Giants are still really solid contenders. Especially with baseball, one guy's not going to take over the entire team. So it's really going to come down to a number of things. But definitely having Machado is really going to boost them up a lot. And if he can perform well in the second half, it's really going to push them towards being a World Series contender in a very tight National League.
Yeah, honestly, Matt?
Oh, I was just going to say, what do you think the odds are that, or like the percentage that the Dodgers make it as opposed to like the Giants? I know that's something Jake's going to be interested in.
Absolutely. Jake's going to probably punch me sitting next to him here, but at this point in time, it's hard to bet against the Dodgers. Just, you know, Clayton Kershaw's getting fully healthy again and adding Machado to the lineup. And they really did. They caught fire there at the end of the first half. They started out really slow. They even may have been as far as fourth place in that division at one point. But they've caught fire lately. So hopefully for Jake's sake, they cooled off with the All-Star break and it'll derail their train just a little bit. But like I said, it is very hard to bet against them at this point in time for sure.
Yeah, then October starts and it's really hard to bet on them, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's true. And like you and I were talking about the other day at work, it is an even year. So you never know what will happen with the Giants come playoffs if they can squeak in a spot there.
If they can just get in, anything can happen. Exactly. Well, especially the entire National League. So you got there. I could see 9 different teams going to 10 different teams maybe going to the World Series because all they have to do, everybody's so close. If they can just get in the playoffs, you know, it's going to be a bloodbath between you got the Braves, Phillies are both doing really well. I want to say I called that. You got Chicago, Milwaukee, and then anybody in the NL West. Even the Pirates have a shot, you know, to win their division. Is there a clear favorite in that, or do you think the NL West is just going to be kind of crazy?
Well, let me first start off. Let me first start off by giving you that credit because when I made my preseason predictions, you asked me why I didn't have the Phillies higher. So for everyone listening, Jake was right. The Phillies and the Braves both making a push for first place in that division. My original title contender that I thought in the Nationals are underperforming, which I guess isn't really the biggest surprise. But yeah, you know, the NL is wide open. There are only 4 teams that are currently more than 5 games out of the wild card right now. So it's blown wide open. Anybody can make it. I was looking through trying to pick a new World Series, you know, who is going to be in the World Series. And when I'm looking at the National League, I really can't pick it out. You know, there's 4 or 5 teams within 4.5 games there, including your Giants. So it's really wide open. Even though the Nationals are 6 games back right now, they can still make a push, of course. So a lot of baseball left to be played. I honestly can't even get you a favorite at this point in time. If I had to guess, I really think that the Braves have had a phenomenal year and are very hot. And if they can keep that up the rest of the year, I think they have a chance at contending. The Dodgers, of course, like we mentioned. And then, you know, you can't really count out the Cubs and the Brewers either. They've both been very hot. So way too many teams to name in there. So it's going to be really interesting to watch how the NL plays out and if it spreads out a little bit more than where we're at currently.
Yeah, I think that Cubs-Brewers race is going to be the one more exciting division races. I don't know why I said Como. I'm speaking English. But the American League's kind of the opposite because you got the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros who are clear cut atop of that division or league, excuse me. I think the Indians are kind of in the second tier. Is there anybody who can win the American League besides those 3 teams? I don't see the Indians. I love the Indians, Francisco Lindor's awesome, but I don't know if they can beat Boston, New York, or Houston.
Yeah, and this is where I'm going to have to pat myself on the back just slightly. My predictions have been pretty solid, but it's been pretty easy to pick. You know, we kind of knew going in the Red Sox and the Yankees were both going to contend for first place and both likely make the playoffs. And then the Indians and the Astros both had 2 weeks of divisions for how good of teams they are. So we kind of saw that coming. The one thing where I kind of slipped up was the Angels, and you know, if Ohtani would have stayed healthy the entire year, you never know what would have happened there.
Yeah, they were doing great.
Yeah, they really were, and they do have a lot of great pieces there, and they really need to figure out a way to bring a title there with Mike Trout and Ohtani, especially now. So I don't know. I'd like to see them make a second half push with Ohtani getting back into throwing again. So that'll be interesting to see. I know with 10, they're about 10. I think they're 10 games out right now. Yeah, 10 out of the wild card. So it's definitely going to be a lot of work, especially with how hot the Mariners and the A's are and their playoff push currently. But honestly, aside from the big 3, I really do. I agree. I like the Indians. Francisco Lindor is awesome. I really like Andrew Miller. He used to be a Yankee, and I think he's still injured right now. But it's really hard to bet against Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros right now. They're just killing it. The Red Sox and the Yankees have 2 of the best records in the league. Houston might have a better win percentage, but yeah, those 3 are just dominating right now.
Yeah, it looks like what's going to happen is no matter who wins the AL East and who gets a wild card, the Red Sox and Yankees will probably be playing each other in the first round, which would leave, again, probably Cleveland and Houston playing each other. So it'll probably be 1 AL East team versus either probably Houston, but Cleveland or Houston. One thing I want to talk about, I know Matt and I are really interested in Mike Trout because the Angels AAA team is in Salt Lake City, so he actually played for the Salt Lake Bees back in the day. From what I understand, Ohtani, their Japanese prospect, or not prospect, but he signed with them the offseason, who was a hitter and a pitcher, he hurt his elbow, so I think he's going to have to get Tommy John, but he's still hitting. Is that the situation?
He's hitting, and he actually, over the weekend was cleared to start throwing progression again. So they believe he's going to be pitching again at some point this year.
So he might avoid surgery then.
It sounds like it right now, but with them being 10 games out of the wild card right now, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they continue to throw him, because they got to have more of a long-term perspective, in my opinion. If he goes out there and throws and gets injured again, even worse, they get further out of the wild card. They already are pretty far out right now and don't have a whole lot of a shot to make the playoffs. But if he ends up needing Tommy John, then he misses half of next year, if not the entire year as well. So that just takes away two seasons for him. So it's really interesting to see if he's going to get back out on the mound this year, if they're just going to use him to pitch. But from what it sounds like, he doesn't need surgery at this time because he has been cleared to start throwing.
What one thing that confused me about the Angels, because I feel like they're the Clippers in the sense that, you know, LA is one of the prime markets players would want to play in. I assume it's like basketball, but the Dodgers are the franchise team. But if you look at the Angels, they have the sixth highest payroll. They have the best player in the world, probably in a generation. And he's never won a playoff game. They went to the playoffs once and he got swept. Like, what more can they do to try to help Mike Trout, I don't know, take advantage of his prime? Because you don't want to trade someone like that. But at the same time, if you're not winning with him, you got to do something different, right?
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. I sit with at least a few people on my team at work that are Angels fans, and I always ask them what the deal is, because they do have a lot of pieces, and they agree with me on that. They have what it takes to get there. It's just they are very inconsistent. Their pitchers seem to get hot at the wrong times, like opposite from each other. So they really just haven't been clicking at this point in time. I don't know how many more pieces that they can really add. From my research, it doesn't really look like they're in the talks of buying right now by the deadline. So I don't know if any offseason moves are going to be made. But it seems like as of right now, for the most part, their team is what they're going with. There was some brief talks about selling off some of their young pitchers or starting pitchers that they have. But from what it sounds like, they are likely going to hold on to those. So they might just be sticking it out the rest of the year and see if Ohtani can come back and see if they can make a playoff push.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because, I mean, I love the Bees, but their farm system isn't great. And, again, they have one of the highest payrolls, so they're spending the money. They're just not getting a ton back on their return. I have a couple. That's kind of all I have on the regular season. I have a couple fun questions I want to ask you baseball-wise. Matt, is there anything, like, standings-wise or playoff picture you wanted to go over, though?
No, the only thing I was interested in is there was a lot of talk this week about the marketability of Mike Trout and how big of a deal that is for Major League Baseball, because he is the best player. And some people are saying it's, oh, well, he plays for the Angels, and that's not really a big market team. Others are saying, you know, he doesn't want to market himself. And so I was just curious on your perspective on that. And because like most people in America, if they're not a sports fan, they don't know who Mike Trout is, and they're probably more likely to know who like Aaron Judge is, who just came into the league. But like, you know, I don't see him in a ton of commercials, and like, I don't know what his voice sounds like either.
Right. Yeah. You know, for Trout, it's kind of tough. One of the things I was reading about today as well was they're having some issues in the clubhouse as well. So I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, him staying in LA for very long, or how really that's going to work. I don't know, Jake, what do you think about that? I don't know a whole lot about the Trout situation in LA.
Yeah, well, I think that came up because during the All-Star game, which I think you were watching, Fox did a thing where they like mic'd Mike Trout up. So they were during the game, they were talking to him, and that was the first time I've ever heard Mike Trout talk. So I kind of view Mike Trout as the Kawhi Leonard of the baseball, you know, like a huge star, but I wouldn't recognize him on the street. There's a, and on ESPN, there's a show called High Noon with Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre. They were talking about it, and they referenced there's something called a Q rating, which kind of measures the familiarity of an appeal of like a brand or a person to marketers. And Mike Trout got the same Q rating as Kenneth Faried, who's like the 11th guy on the Denver Nuggets or something like that.
I was going to say, I don't recognize that name.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't recognize it. And I remember last year I was watching a Philadelphia Eagles football game, and I saw Carson Wentz scored a touchdown. He gave it to some fan, and the fan was Mike Trout, and I had no idea. You know what I mean? But, like, there's some baseball players who are stars. Like, everybody – I feel like most people recognize Bryce Harper. Aaron Judge is another one who's a big star. So – I think there's been some debate with like Robert Manfred, the commissioner, who is trying to take advantage of having this huge star. And Mike Trout, like, doesn't use social media, doesn't talk a whole lot. So he's not really helping himself out. And he's like, I can do what I want. You know, like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about baseball. I care about me. And the commissioner is starting to take advantage of him. Not like in a bad way, but, you know, like help the sport out.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. I see what you're meaning about guys in big market teams, though. I mean, personally, for the longest time, I was under the impression that Bryce Harper was much of a bigger deal than Mike Trout, just because, like, I guess you would call the Nationals a big name team, even though, or a big market team, even though they really haven't made a whole lot of postseason pushes. But he's just, I guess he's a lot more vocal. Like you're saying, Mike Trout doesn't really use social media. So that these days is kind of something that really pushes a player into popularity. But he really just does it on the field. His stats are unbelievable. He's by far the best player in the league. And I guess other than baseball fans, most people probably don't know that.
Yeah, I
mean, I'm not sure how big a deal that is anyway, because, like, the reason stars are important is because that draws fans to the game, and, like, people know who LeBron James is, and they want to watch him in the playoffs. But, like Jake was saying, is the Angels haven't won a playoff game with Mike Trout, and so, I mean, yeah, I can't really get excited to watch Mike Trout in the playoffs, so I don't know how much it would help Major League Baseball if he was a more household name.
Right.
I think one thing I want to talk about, this can be like an episode next week or in a couple weeks, but like I want to talk about, you know, the race of baseball, like how it's becoming more and more white and like why kids aren't playing it as much and like how that has to do with a Mike Trout, but also stars like Francisco Lindor. You know, he's doing a lot, the shortstop for Cleveland, because I feel like if you watch like highlights of baseball, it's exciting, but like trying to get kids to see like the whole game is exciting. So that's definitely a topic I want to talk about. It's just I have a lot to say, so it probably takes a little bit, but and then we're going to let Jacob go. Matt, do you have any more questions for Jacob?
No, I'm good. It was fun to have you on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on again.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on the show. We'll have to hit you up again sometime. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We're going to talk Kawhi and the Raptors and really whatever else we want to talk about. So be right back. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. Big thanks to Jacob Caldwell joining the show. Again, he's our senior writer that covers baseball. You can hit him up on Twitter and Instagram at Uncle. And then it's Jacob spelled backwards, B-O-C-A-J, Uncle Bokage is his social media stuff. He's a really, really smart baseball guy, really funny guy. So hit him up. We're going to talk about Kawhi Leonard now. So he got traded between shows to Toronto, the Toronto Raptors. So San Antonio traded him and Danny Green for – it was – DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a top 20 protected first round pick. So if it's inside the top 20, it'll turn into 2 second round picks in 2020. So now let's just start with initial reactions. What was the first thing you thought of when you saw this trade?
Just that's cold, man. That's what I thought. I mean, is so interesting with Toronto because, I mean, the general consensus is that this was a good trade for Toronto, even if Kawhi leaves, because it kickstarts the rebuild. It's just so interesting that for the entire history of the Raptors, they've been trying to find a star who wants to stay in Toronto, and then they get one who wants to stay in Toronto, and 2 years later, you trade him for a guy who wants to go to L.A.,
Yeah, that's what – at first I thought both teams got worse, but then I thought about it, and it's, I think for this coming season, 2018, if Kawhi is healthy, because I love Danny Green. I know he's not what he used to be, but I think a healthy Danny Green with Kawhi Leonard, the Raptors have the best depth, and, you know, with Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard in the entire league. But, yeah, DeMar DeRozan, man, I loved him in Toronto. He was sweet. It'd be like if the Jazz – it's not the exact same situation, but if the Jazz would have – I don't even want to say Hayward. Let's say Mitchell 5 years from now, we trade Donovan Mitchell, like, to quote-unquote – even if it makes the team better, like, Mitchell's our guy. You know, DeMar DeRozan was huge for Toronto. Yeah, he was part of the best season in Toronto history. And, you know, he signed that extension where he could have gone to L.A. He could have left. Like, Toronto's freezing, but he stayed there. You know, you feel bad for the guy. Is all, you know, RIP to DeMar. And I think he's a better player than people talk about. He's been all NBA for, I think, 2 seasons in a row. He's really improved his 3-point shooting. I think there's not a lot of shooting guards. Here's what I was going to ask you, Matt, is, you know, DeMar DeRozan versus Kyle Lowry. I think there's not a whole lot of shooting guards you take over DeMar DeRozan.
Not really. I mean, yeah, I don't know who else. And I mean, I think part of it was the contract situation with DeMar DeRozan. But like, yeah, no, I'm not sure. I mean, shoot it. Because really all of the guards or most of them are point guards. Because I mean, like, I would take DeMar over Bradley Beal. You know, I'd take him over Danny Green, who was just in this trade. I mean, he's better than Donovan Mitchell today. I would rather have Donovan Mitchell on my team because he's younger, and I think he's going to be better than DeMar DeRozan possibly as quickly as next year. But you're right. I mean, as far as shooting guards go, I mean, and well, the thing that's weird about DeMar, and I think the reason people are lower on him than we are, is that he's an old school shooting guard. You know, he likes the mid range game. He can shoot the three when he needs to, but it's not his favorite. You know, he's not a great defender. He's an adequate defender. So I think those weaknesses in his game really, I think, kind of bring him down in most people's view in this statistical era that we're in. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I can't think of a shooting guard that I would take over him today.
Let me ask you this. I think Golden State would choose Klay Thompson, but if you're just, you know, redrafting the NBA and you got, like, I don't know, the 15th, 20th pick, would you take DeRozan or Klay Thompson first, just new NBA team? Let me throw in there. Those three, I think, are all pretty close.
I mean, if this was going to be my – who was the third guy, sorry?
DJ McCollum.
Oh, yeah. I take Clay and DeMar over CJ. So if it was going to be my first pick, I would pick DeMar DeRozan. Like, I'd rather have DeMar DeRozan be the best player on my team than Clay Thompson. But I'm assuming by the time I get around to picking either of those two guys, I already have a couple. I already have a ball handler or two that I want to build the team around. And because of that, I probably end up picking Clay Thompson.
Well, no, I mean, if you're like, you're the back end of the first round of this, quote unquote, I mean, how many, I don't think either of them would be the 40th or 50th pick. I think they both go in the top 30, right?
Yeah. So I guess in that sense, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're not getting, you know, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on the same team. Yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm probably picking DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. And like you said, he's improved at 3-point shooting, but he's not fantastic at it. Defense, his plus minus is like okay just because his defense isn't that great. He was actually on the bench for a lot of the fourth quarter in that game in Toronto where Cleveland won and took a 3-0 lead in the playoffs. That was really turned out to be his last meaningful game as a Raptor. Let's talk about Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. So they got an interesting projected. I'm in love with Toronto's team, honestly. Like, I loved watching him last year with DeRozan. It's going to be interesting with Kawhi because he's such a different player. I don't think he needs the ball as much as DeMar DeRozan did, so it'll be interesting to watch him play with Kyle Lowry. But Toronto's front court, the back court and their wing depth is going to be just incredible to watch next year. What do you think – where do you put – let's say Kawhi's healthy. Where do you put Toronto in terms of – Eastern Conference? I think they're in the top three for sure, but out of Philly, Boston, and Toronto, where do you rank them with a healthy Kawhi Leonard?
Two. And they're behind Boston because Toronto has the best player in Kawhi Leonard, but then I'd say Boston probably has three players better than Kyle Lowry because of Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford. I really, really like Horford, and he caused a ton of problems in the playoffs. And then Kyle Lowry is the fifth best player. And so after that, I just feel like Boston has more talent at the top. And in the playoffs, your top talent matters more than your bench talent does. So I think you got to pick Boston.
You have Al Horford ahead of Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
That is interesting. I can definitely see. I put Lowry ahead. I think I was thinking if Lowry's ahead of Hayward, you know, I think those two are battling for the third best player on those teams. So you have Lowry fifth. I think this makes Philly a clear cut number three, and that Philly Boston rivalry is going to take a back seat, kind of.
Definitely, yeah. And I mean, in a vacuum, I probably do take Kyle Lowry over Al Horford. I just think in the system that Brad Stevens can create with all of his different wings and the different players who can handle the ball and shoot the three and all the different spacing problems that Al Horford causes for defense, that's why I think he's more valuable in a playoff series in that sense.
Yeah. No, I honestly just want to fast forward to the playoff. I think the entire Eastern Conference, it's going to come down to those three, really, Boston and Toronto, I think. But I'm looking at Toronto's roster right now. They got one of the reasons I think the – like you said, the trade was a win even if Kawhi Leonard does leave for the Lakers or another team, is that the Toronto Raptors have so many young guys that they need to pay. They got – Fred VanVleet just signed an extension, but I think it was only 1 or 2 years. They got DeLon Wright, Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam. They don't have Jakob Poeltl, obviously. Last year, they drafted OG and Nwobi. Like, part of the reason they were so good last year is because all their young guys in draft, most of their young picks were hitting, so they're going to have to pay those guys eventually. So they didn't want to be in the situation Boston was in where they're going to have to maybe overpay to keep Marcus Smart, who just signed I think it was about $12 million a year deal with Boston. I love Marcus Smart, but that's overpaying a little bit for me. But the point is, they're going to have the flexibility to re-sign those young players. And it's hard because DeRozan is a staple of that franchise. But it's interesting because there's part of me that thinks, you know, if you're not trying to win, what are you trying to do? And I'd rather be last than second just because you're going to get closer, faster to winning. But also, like, the Utah Jazz, they never won a championship with Stockton and Malone, but that's the favorite part of everybody's franchise, you know what I mean? I think Portland fans, they would rather have Damian Lillard for, I don't know, 10 more years, his entire career, and if they never win a championship, you know, they have a guy who's been a superstar for them and stayed with them forever instead of, like, trading him and trying to rebuild. You don't know if you're going to get a Damian Lillard again. If Kawhi leaves, you don't know that any of these young players are going to turn into a DeMar DeRozan player. So I think that's always a hard part of being a general manager is balancing between, yeah, we want a championship, but the other side of being really good for a really long time also isn't the worst thing in the world, even if you never do win a championship.
Well, yeah, I mean, and like this year as a BYU fan, I think I was certainly in that group that was like, Bronco Mendenhall has plateaued. This is the best he's going to do. Let's risk doing worse in hopes of doing better. This year was terrible. This year was so miserable as a BYU fan. And like, if we, considering the fact that they're probably not going to win a championship, I would much rather just keep churning out 9-10 game win seasons. And there's a little bit of disappointment in that, you know, but I mean, you get to go to see the team win and that's fun. So what I think is interesting about the Raptors and like what you say, they don't want to overpay these guys. If they are in a rebuild, I think it's really, really interesting because I think you can package a couple of these guys and get first-round picks because what you're trading is, if you can do it a couple of years before, you know, trading a couple guys who are 2 years away from a contract extension and therefore a raise to a team like the Lakers that needs good players for not a lot of money, I think that's one of the few things you'd be able to get first-round picks out of. So I think the Raptors probably have one of the best inventories of assets in the league. So I think they are really well positioned if this Kawhi Leonard thing doesn't work out. But, you know, also, I don't think there's any reason that Toronto shouldn't be trying to get Kawhi to stay and then try to get another star to come into Toronto.
Yeah, I think... Well, I mean, back to your first point, it's those top three teams, Toronto, Boston, and Philly, arguably have the most assets in the NBA between draft picks and young players. And it's just like, you know, NFL quarterbacks. Part of the reason Seattle won their Super Bowl, their only Super Bowl, everyone should remember that, they've only won one time, is Russell Wilson was on a rookie deal. And then once he signed, same with the Colts, like when Andrew Luck was on his rookie deal, the Colts were a lot better. But when quarterbacks signed that first, and the Eagles, Carson Wentz is on his rookie deal, so they can pay everybody so much more. And then when they sign that extension and are making $20 million a year, there's so much less cap flexibility and space to go around to pay other guys. So Boston has like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and Toronto has all these young players, and Philadelphia has Ben Simmons all on rookie contracts, so they're not making that much. They can pay other guys, like Philly can pay J.J. Redick. Boston can pay Al Horford and Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. Like, it just, if the rookie contract guys are performing as good or like close to the level of their future contract value, what it's going to be, that's how you win championships in the NBA, unless you're the Warriors and you're the best team in the history. But that's what is successful. So I think you're right. Like, Toronto has a good shot. I'm interested to see, because Paul George stayed in Oklahoma City, and I don't know a lot about Toronto, but I hear it's a whole lot cooler than Oklahoma City, except for the weather. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the reason this interests me is that we treat the Raptors like they're a small market team. They're probably, you know, in the top six in terms of market size, actually, because you're not just getting Toronto, which is bigger than Boston and a lot of these other cities, but you're getting all of Canada. But we treat them like a small market team. You know, there's always a team or a playoff series in the first round that's the NBA TV series, you know, that first round of the playoffs that nobody really wants to watch. And that was always Toronto until they got the number one seed. And they couldn't do it. I think if they could have made the Raptors that NBA TV series, then they could have. I just don't think you can do that to the number one seed. We know part of the reason that Kawhi was upset, maybe not necessarily with San Antonio, but probably part of the reason he wanted to go to LA, is that he wanted a bigger contract with Jordan Brand for wearing their shoes. And their point was you won't do commercials. Nobody knows you wear the shoes. Nobody's paying attention in San Antonio, so it doesn't make any sense for us to give you a bigger shoe deal. And so if that was the case in San Antonio, which is admittedly a small market, but you got Greg Popovich and you had all this history, there's no way he's getting a bigger shoe deal in Toronto.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not going to happen.
See, that's what kind of goes back to that Mike Trout thing. Bryce Harper is the face of Under Armour baseball. I have no idea what cleats Mike Trout wears.
No, you know what I mean? No idea.
And, like, I know Kawhi Leonard is sponsored by Jordan, but, I mean, he's not their guy. Like, their guy is going to be Chris Paul, Jimmy Butler, you know, guys who are, like, actually do stuff and do commercials. Like, Kawhi Leonard, I've never heard him talk in my entire life.
Yeah. No, I mean, with Mike Trout, it appears he maybe doesn't care about the shoe contract deal, and I'm sure the Angels are paying him plenty of money. But we know – I mean, this shoe thing is the only thing that I know about Kawhi Leonard. Like you said, I don't know what his voice sounds like. I don't know anything else about Kawhi Leonard other than the fact that he's from Los Angeles. But I don't know if it's like a Paul George, he's from Los Angeles. I don't know if he wants to be close to his family. I don't know. I mean, it appears that he was a Lakers fan. But that's the problem with this, and probably the problem for the Raptors GM is like, you know, we don't have any idea what this guy's going to do, and we're probably not going to have any idea, you know, once the season's over, we're probably not going to know, because we don't know if he's going to talk to even us.
And that's another thing, like, I don't even know what Kawhi wants. Like, I feel like a lot of it, him wanting to go to L.A., quote-unquote, is his uncle wants him to go to L.A. It sounds like his uncle and whoever the agent is, it sounds like they're not very good at their jobs, and it's just kind of their first time doing it. And they're kind of, you know, messing with Kawhi. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what Kawhi wants.
Yeah, I don't know. Someday they're going to make a 30 for 30 about this, and it's going to be crazy interesting.
Yeah. So one thing, let's talk about San Antonio end of this real quick. Then we're going to talk some MLS soccer to close. We're wrapping up. I think San Antonio for years has been like the New England Patriots of the NBA in terms of, like, you know, most steady franchise. If they make a trade or move or whatever, you don't really doubt them. They've won 5 championships in the last 20 something years between Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, David Robinson. And I kind of feel like this, it was losing its mystique, but with this Kawhi trade, I kind of feel like they're done being like that San Antonio Spurs mystique. I feel like is over. and they're just another team now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, because, you know, right now they've got, well, they're certainly a better team than they were last season, because of the fact that Kawhi didn't play. You're effectively trading Danny Green for DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl, who, by the way, I think is going to do really well in San Antonio. He's a good player, and I think they're going to be able to use him really effectively next to LaMarcus Aldridge. But, yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that's not a team that can win an NBA championship. They're probably not going to get a big star to come there in free agency, although I'm sure that's their plan and what they're going to try to angle to do and kind of have one last shot at it with Pop. But, like, I don't see Pop staying around for longer than 4 years. And if he's going to leave, I don't know what San Antonio does. I mean, because I don't think all of San Antonio's success has to do with Popovich. I think it's a good front office, a good ownership group, and I think a lot of that is going to stay in place. It's just we've attached so much of it to Popovich that as soon as he leaves, I think the players are going to think that a lot of that's leaving as well, and it's just not going to be an attractive place to go to.
Yeah, and I like their biggest free agent in the last X amount of years was LaMarcus Aldridge, who's, you know, maybe like a B-plus free agent. He's a really good player. And I'm looking at their roster. They got a lot of, you know, they got DeJounte Murray, their point guard, who I really like, but he's not like a top, he's not Steph Curry or anything, you know what I mean? They got Rudy Gay, Patty Mills, Marco Bellinelli. I'm really intrigued by Lonnie Walker, their draft pick out of Miami, but they have a lot of like C and B players. Paul Gasol's like 36 or 33, something like that. They don't have a guy anymore, you know? And
yeah.
So DeMar DeRozan, I'll be interesting to see what he does with that roster. But you're right. I think Popovich was probably the biggest draw that even if they weren't successful all the time, like people would consider it because it'd be playing for, quote unquote, the best coach in the league. And now that he's going to be gone, I think this is going to be his last year. He could play a couple more years. But, you know, during the playoffs, his wife passed away. That's obviously, I don't know what it's like to go through, but it's terrible to go through. And Tim Duncan's gone. Ginobili's going to be gone within a year, I believe. Tony Parker went to Charlotte. It's just hanging around when there's not really a need to anymore. And he doesn't – I don't feel like he's one of those people who needs the coach or needs the money. So I feel like he'd be okay walking away from it.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, that's obviously not a knock on San Antonio. They've – I mean, they've been the best team in the NBA for the last – I don't know, 25 years probably, right?
Since David Robinson, I think so, yeah. So 90-ish, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, they accomplished something incredible, but, you know, that's every team eventually is going to have to rebuild. I mean, it happened with the Lakers, who we thought were just going to be good forever, but, I mean, they had to go through a rebuilding period too. And so, you know, hopefully – I mean, not hopefully as a Jazz fan, but hopefully for them, their front office and ownership group is going to be able to pull in another good coach and keep up the prestige of the organization, and they'll be back in a few years.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm really excited to keep tabs, especially on Kawhi. I think if he's not healthy, I think that whole thing is going to be a crazy year for Toronto. See what happens. Let's wrap it up. Let's talk about the MLS Major League Soccer for a little bit as we close. First thing, Real Salt Lake is in sixth place in the West. So we'll talk about Real Salt Lake a little bit, then just talk generally about the MLS, and then we'll call it. Matt, I'll just kind of let you steamroll from here for a little bit at least.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about Real Salt Lake last week, and we missed a big Mike Pecky rant on the video assistant referee because there was a couple of plays that he felt should have been reviewed that were not. This week against Colorado, there was a play in a lot of ways very similar to what happened in Minnesota, where the Real Salt Lake player was the one who committed the foul. This time they did review it and ended up giving the penalty to Colorado. So interesting inconsistency with the VAR. And so Pecky, what he wants mostly is just more accountability from the referees. And I think MLS is an interesting league because, or at least their situation with the referees are, because in the NBA, you know, we've got the last 2-minute report. In the NFL, we don't really have that, but I do feel like we've got
something we know what they're working on in the offseason. We know the rule changes we make, and we don't really have any of that. And that's where I think the frustration is just there's no communication at all. And that's just creating this enormous tension, not just with Real Salt Lake. I think there's a lot of other teams in MLS that are having problems with the refs.
Yeah, I think, and one thing with VAR, we can talk for a little bit, because in the World Cup, it was the first World Cup that VAR video review was used as well. And it seems like in all soccer, it's causing more problems than solving.
Well, yeah, it's just, I don't think they know how to use it yet, because you don't want to use it too much. But it just seems like there continue to be situations where there are wrong calls. We can all see that they're wrong calls, but they don't want to review it. And so because of that, you're ending up with the wrong call. And then other times they do review it, and everybody who watches it can see that it changes except for the ref. And so, I mean, this is something I think it's part of it is just introducing it now, but it's going to be really interesting to see where it is in 5 years and see how they've worked out some of these kinks.
Yeah, that will be really interesting to see. Yeah, it's kind of new. Like, there is more transparency in the NBA and the NFL with their refs. And maybe it'll be something that they just got to figure out, and it's going to be a really important part of soccer and MLS going forward. Any thoughts on, general playoff picture coming up or anything like that?
Let me pull up the standings real quick.
Salt Lake is in sixth, but Minnesota and Houston and Vancouver are pretty close to them. And then in the East, you got Philadelphia is a little bit behind New England. Atlanta United, there's something they said. They're getting so many people at their games. They're smashing attendance records. I think it's incredible what they've done as a expansion franchise, Atlanta United, run by Carlos Bocanegra, former U.S. national team player.
Yeah, well, and Josef Martinez, who plays for them, he's on pace to break the records for most goals scored in a single season. He already holds the MLS record for most hat tricks in a career, and he's only been in the league for like a year and a half. So that dude is obviously really, really special. I think first, in terms of who's winning the whole thing, MLS is really a crapshoot. There are a lot of years where the sixth and fifth seed, which are the two lowest seeds, ends up winning the whole thing. But if you don't take that into account, I'm looking at Atlanta United as a team that wins. New York City FC has a really good home field advantage, so that's something that really could help them. I just don't love anybody in the West. I think it's probably going to end up being an Eastern Conference team.
All right, I would love Atlanta to win. I think that'd be cool. Toronto is having a crappy year.
Yeah, so they just decided at the beginning of the year, you know what, we're going to throw away the beginning of the season. We're just going to focus on Champions League and try to win that, which I think is probably the right decision. I just don't understand how they haven't been able to turn it back on. I was fine with them being last in the league to start the year, but they've just not been able to pick up any steam. I thought they were going to be able to get back to like the sixth seed at least. We're only about halfway through the year. They're only 9 points back of New England. And so they still might be able to turn it on. And I would probably pick them if I had to pick to make the playoffs.
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm really excited to see that. The playoffs start in October. Am I right on that, Matt?
They may start the first week in November, but end of October, beginning of November.
So it's really, really exciting. One thing I want to talk about, Matt, on a future show is the schedule, because Europe plays their seasons August to April. About the United States play in, spring to fall. So like March or April to October. And there's a lot of complaints because that messes with the international schedule and everything like that. But also, you can't have a season where you have teams like Chicago and Philadelphia and Montreal and Boston and Vancouver, and for that matter, Utah and Colorado, where they play from November to February outdoor games. You can't do that. So that's one thing. And maybe next show, maybe in a month or so, we'll talk about that. We don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you want to go to Toronto and play a soccer game in February?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I get the people saying it, but they're like, the people saying it are all in Los Angeles probably. So
That's something
I want to talk about for sure. Do you have anything to throw in real quick? I think we're at about time.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Team Fredette.
Oh, right. Matt's a big Jimmer Fredette fan. So I saw he had a three-pointer this year. So Matt's going to talk about it for 18 minutes.
Yes. So there is a tournament called the Basketball Tournament, which I actually love as a title. I think it's a great title. Anybody can enter who they want, whoever wants. The winning team gets $2 million. Winner takes all. It's broadcast on ESPN. And one of the teams participating is Team Fredette. And Jimmer has collected some of his BYU buddies. Charles Owuo, he's got Brandon Davies playing. And so I was just, this morning I was watching Jimmer Fredette play basketball in a blue uniform with Charles Owuo and Brandon Davies. And it made me so happy because that is the most joy that I've got from basketball until watching the Jazz this year. I mean, Jimmer Mania was one of the top three times of my life as a sports fan. And so just being able to watch it again, albeit not in the NBA, is just something that I've really enjoyed and appreciated.
Yeah, I love explaining to people in Arizona, like, yeah, BYU is number three in the country, and they kicked their second-best player off the team. Like, yeah, they take the honor code seriously. Yeah, I can't shave while I took tests. Or the opposite, like, I had to shave to take a test and stuff like that. So it's really fun explaining the honor code to everybody who's not familiar with BYU.
Oh, yeah. You know that term, which have you ever been asked that question, which sports hill would you die on? Like, what is something, an argument that you are sure you are right about that probably nobody else agrees with?
Yeah, and then I know yours. You can say it, though.
Mine is, if Jimmer Fredette does not get drafted by the Sacramento Kings, the Cleveland Browns of the NBA, where basketball players go to die, Jimmer Fredette is an all-star. I am sure of it.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to say, that's even more preposterous than what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say BYU would have won the national championship.
Oh, well, I mean, if we're talking about if Brandon Davies doesn't...
Brandon Davies gets suspended.
I don't know. Well, it's just so hard to predict because they don't get the 3 seed. They probably get a 1 or a 2 seed. If that doesn't happen. But I will say the championship game was between UConn and Butler that year, and it was the worst played game of basketball I've ever seen. Shooting was abysmal.
And that championship game,
the shooting would not have been abysmal.
That's the worst game in any sport I've ever watched. I think I walked out at the end. Like, I didn't even care who won. I was just so sick of it. And
no, I didn't watch it either. It was just so terrible to watch,
and it sucked because, like, this was before I hated Butler because Hayward went there, but the year before when they lost to Duke on that buzzer beat where Hayward missed the half court shot, I was so excited. I wanted them to win so bad, and then it was just the most boring, ugliest basketball I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. So that is that. Yeah, that is a lovely sports moment that was taken away from me. And then all of Jimmer's NBA career was taken away from me because the Sacramento Kings just don't understand how to develop anybody, you know, like, because, I mean, obviously DeMarcus Cousins is really good, but that was just going to happen. I mean, he's so tall and so big and so much natural talent that's not really something you can screw up.
Who? Yeah, one thing we'll have to talk about, who's maybe the Sacramento Kings or the Cleveland Browns of baseball? We got a lot of stuff. I got a bunch of topics right now left to go over in future shows.
Yeah. So, make sure everybody tunes in to watch the basketball tournament and try to relive the BYU glory days.
Yes, the BYU glory days. And thanks everybody for listening as well. Again, this is Double Take with Matt and Jake. We're on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom. We'd love you to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment. Really appreciate it. Thanks for everybody who's reached out and said that. Also, you can hit us up on social media. At Twitter and Instagram, it's at MJDoubleTake. The email is MJDoubleTake@gmail.com. Matt's personal Twitter is at MattCowden24. Mine for Twitter and Instagram is at JacobCowden28. I really appreciate you guys listening. We're going to be backpacking. This week, I fly to Utah. I'm going to go backpacking in Kings Peak with Matt and our other brother and a couple other cousins. So sometime next week, we will put another episode up when I fly back. So really looking forward to that. And thank you guys for listening so much. Talk to you guys later.